taken me the better part of an hour to find someone who could point the girl out earlier in the gym. I've offered to help her, Imogen says quietly. She won't take it. Why the hell not? I catch my knife, flipping it with total muscle memory. Imogen sighs. No fucking clue, but her stubbornness is going to get her killed. I watch Liam's sister struggle under J6's weight, her face splotchy and red from the exertion, and blow out a slow, resigned breath, my fist closing around the hilt of the dagger. The unspoken rule of the quadrant is to let the stronger weed out the weak before they can become a liability to the wing. As a rider, I should walk away. I should let Sloane rise or fall on her own merits. But as Liam's friend, there's no way I can stand by and watch her die. Not on Monday, she won't.
You suddenly develop Melgren's signet over there?
Imogen retorts, tucking a chin-length strand of pink hair behind her ear.
I'm calling it!
Rhee shouts, ending the match, and I breathe a sigh of relief. Not exactly. Glancing around the gym, I locate Sloane's opponent for Monday. I just need to do a couple of things after physics, but I'll see you for our gym session tonight. What muscles I have are all due to Imogen's dedication to torturing me at the weight machine since last year.
How's that class going for you, anyway?
Imogen asks with a sarcastic smile, damn well knowing that I couldn't make it through without Rhiannon's help. I might lead our year in history, geography, and every other subject that crosses over with the scribes, but physics? Not my specialty. Hey, Vi, a hand curls over the top of my shoulder from behind me, and my heart surges, beating painfully in my ears. Not again. Muscle memory takes over as I spin around, dislodging the grip, and push my left forearm against a leather-clad chest, catching the assailant off balance and allowing me to shove him the few inches backward into the wall while whipping my dagger to his tattooed throat in one instinctual motion. Hey, hey! Riddick's eyes bulge as he throws his hands up, palms outward. Violet! I blink quickly as the knot in his throat bobs, scraping the edge of my blade. Riddick, it's not an assassin, it's just Riddick. Adrenaline pours into my system and my hand trembles slightly as I lower the weapon. Sorry, I mumble. For nearly dissecting my jugular? Riddick sidesteps before lowering his hands. I knew you were fast, but damn. Mortification deprives me of words as heat rushes into my face. I nearly slit my friend's throat. Somehow, I find the sheath.
You should know better than to sneak up on someone, Imogen lectures, her calm tone at odds with the knife she clutches in her left hand.
I'm sorry, won't do it again, he promises, his gaze shifting to worry as he glances over my shoulder. I just figured I'd see if you wanted to walk to physics. Sawyer's already by the door.
Everything all right?
Rhee asks, walking to my side as she slips her satchel over her shoulder.
All good, Imogen answers. You're doing a great job as squad leader, by the way. It was a good idea to get the first year's extra sparring time.
Thanks, Rhee stares at Imogen like she's grown a second nose.
See you tonight.
Imogen sheathes her knife and looks at me with more understanding than I want either of us to have as she backs away.
I'm going to offer my help to Mari.
Again. I nod.
You sure everything is good?
Rhee asks as I pick up my pack from the floor and nearly drop it with my jitters. Stupid fucking adrenaline.
Perfect, I force the fakest smile known to humankind. Let's go to physics. Yay, physics.
Rhee exchanges a look with Riddick.
She's probably just nervous about the quiz, and I didn't help by startling her like a jackass.
He rubs the skin of his throat as we start toward the door, where Sawyer waits. Rhiannon's mouth drops open for a second.
Violet, I thought you said you had it down. We could have studied again this morning. I can't help you if you don't tell me you need help.
Isn't that the truth?
Just remember, you need 2 out of 3 elements when pulling any flight maneuver.
she recites as Sawyer takes a bite out of an apple and opens the gym door for us. Velocity, power, or... I scan the first floor of the academic wing as we walk down the hall, my gaze scouring every alcove, every classroom door for someone who might jump out at us. Violet? Wrenching my focus from the stairwell ahead, I find Ree giving me an expectant look. Right. She's asking me about physics and aerodynamics.
Altitude, Sawyer answers.
Right, I nod as we step into the stairwell. Altitude. You're killing me, Rhiannon starts.
Now, someone shouts from behind us. Before I can react, a bag is thrown over my head, and with one breath, I'm unconscious.
An excerpt from Major Afendra's Guide to the Rider's Quadrant, unauthorized edition. There is a natural distrust that must be overcome between infantry cadets and riders. This exists mainly because riders will never trust that infantry has the courage to hold the line when dragons arrive, and infantry will never trust that the dragons won't eat them. Chapter 14. I jolt awake as the scent of something acrid fills my lungs, and I swing my fist, knocking a hand away from my face, smelling salts. She's up, a woman in dark blue announces, backing away to confer with. Professor Grady? My head buzzes as I sit up, stretching my legs in front of me, and immediately reach for Tarn. What's going on? My eyes are slow to adjust to the bright light, but it looks like we're in some sort of forest. The course humans wouldn't have to take if they would simply stay seated, known as RSC, he growls with surprising frustration, like he's the one who's just been drugged and dragged out of the quadrant. Rhiannon, Sawyer, and Riddick are all on my right, all looking as confused as I feel. To my left are four second-year riders with second squad, flame section, second wing designations, looking around the forest in bewilderment. Nice to see we aren't the only ones befuddled. At least it's not an assassination attempt. If it was, we'd be dead, especially as fuzzy as I feel. It will be if we aren't back at Basgaiath when Sigail arrives tomorrow. Oh, shit. This can't last longer than a day, can it? If it does, you should fly back alone. Across from us sit two groups of eight infantry cadets, if their blue uniforms are any indication, in hushed conversation. They're all homogeneous. The four men all have the same military short haircut, cropped close to their skulls in a fade, and the women wear their hair slicked back in tight buns. Same dark blue uniforms, same boots, same everything. Only the name tags above their hearts are different, except for the one with a squad leader designation on their shoulder in each group. The four of us are all dressed in our summer uniforms, but we've each made our own modifications. My lightweight black top has slits down the front that give me direct access to the daggers sheathed in my armor at my ribs. Rhiannon prefers a tunic with sheaths directly sewn in. Sawyer likes his sleeves short, weapons strapped to his upper arms, and Riddick never took the time to see the uniform tailor. He just ripped his sleeves off. We aren't even wearing name tags, and the same goes for the squad from Second Wing. And leave you to fend for yourself? The forest floor is soft and muddy in patches, and the afternoon sun streams in between the branches at an angle, which means we've only been unconscious an hour, maybe two at most. It's nothing but trees as far as I can see. I think that's the point, I blink, fighting to bring my brain into sharper focus. Promise me, if I'm stuck out here on land nav, that you'll see her if you can. We can't be that far from Basgaiath. Professor Grady hands each rider a water skin. Sorry for the abrupt change of scenery. Hydrate. We all uncork our skins and drink. The water is crisp and cold, but there's something else there too. Pungent, earthy, and something bitterly floral that I can't quite place. I close the skin, cringing at the aftertaste, Professor Grady really needs to take better care of his skins.
You all right? I ask Ree, who is checking her sheaths for weapons.
A little dazed, but yeah, you?
I nod, running my hands down my sides to make sure my daggers are exactly where I left them.
They are. My bag is still strapped to my back, too.
They took us in the stairwell?
I look over to see Sawyer rubbing his temples and Riddick scratching the tattoo on his neck.
That's my last memory, she nods in agreement, studying the squads next to and across from us.
Anyone know where we are? Sawyer asks the obviously more alert infantry squads.
The cadets look over at us, but no one answers, or speaks at all.
I'm gonna take that as a no, Riddick drawls.
It's a no from us, the rider from second wing with a squad leader designation lifts his hand in greeting.
Do you know where, I start to say toward Tairn, but the usually crystal clear connection is muffled, like someone has thrown a blanket over it. Panic clenches my heart as I realize the same is true for Andarna, though I don't risk waking her with questions. I can't reach Tairn.
Rhee's gaze snaps to mine, and she cocks her head to the side.
Shit. Fjerg either. It feels like something is
smothering the connection, Sawyer finishes.
I set the waterskin down next to me, and the others catch on doing the same.
What in Dune's name did we just drink?
We're blocked out, a rider with a shoulder-length dark blonde braid whispers.
Breathe, Maribel, the squad leader orders, shoving his tan hand into his dark curls, like he might actually benefit from that suggestion a little more. It can't be for long.
Riddick's hands fist.
This isn't right. I don't give a shit if it's for the course. We're not supposed to be cut off from them.
Tomas? Rhiannon asks, leaning forward to look past me.
Hey, Ree, the squad leader waves. This is Brisa, he points to a woman with a shaved head, rich brown skin, and an observant, quick-moving gaze, and she gives us a curt nod. Mirabel, he swings his finger to the blonde with pronounced flight goggle lines in her pale cheeks and a fire-wielder patch on her shoulder, and she waves. And Cohen, he finishes, the rider closest to me, with a fast smile, short black hair, and warm, russet brown skin, lifts his hand in greeting.
Hi, Rhiannon nods. This is Sawyer, Riddick, and Violet.
The pleasantries are cut off short as Professor Grady marks something in a folder and clears his throat.
Now that you're all awake, welcome to the first joint land navigation exercise.
He pulls two closed maps from the folder.
In the last 2 weeks, you've been taught how to read a map, and today you'll put those skills to use in a practical setting. Were this an actual operation with the makeup of an outpost, this unit would consist of the composition you see here.
He steps away from a woman who must be the infantry professor, revealing two cadets in pale blue sitting beside a scribe. Their hood is down, and they're wearing cream pants with a cream hooded tunic, not robes. But that's definitely a scribe.
Riders and infantry for fighting, a scribe to record the event, and healers for obvious reasons.
He motions them forward, and all three move to stand at the end of the infantry lineup. The infantry professor wearing captain rank walks up and stops beside Professor Grady with impeccable posture.
Cadets, rise, she says.
The infantry squads practically jump to their feet, immediately standing at attention.
I draw back slightly, surprised at my first instinct, which is to tell the infantry captain to fuck off because I don't answer to her.
No rider does. Professor Grady glances our way and nods. The eight of us stand, but we're not even at ease, we just are. The infantry captain looks at us and barely refrains from rolling her eyes.
This is the shortest course you'll be conquering together this year, so try to get to know one another. Fourth wing, you're attached to fourth squad.
She looks around and one of the cadets directly ahead raises his hand.
And second wing, you're attached to second squad, just to make it easy.
A cadet raises her hand on the left.
Your objective is to find the location marked on the maps and secure it. Once you do, you'll be extracted.
It can't be that easy.
Professor Grady holds out the maps, and Rhiannon steps forward, taking both and handing one to Tomas. One of the infantry cadets starts to step forward, but stills.
Two maps, Professor Grady says. Two teams, but one cohesive unit. You're not used to working together. You weren't even warned you would be. But keeping Navarre safe requires teamwork between the segments of our military. There are times in your careers when you'll need someone you can trust in the air or on the ground. And those bonds are forged here, at Bazgaith.
He looks between our groups.
We'll see you tomorrow afternoon.
Tomorrow afternoon. My stomach founders. Taryn won't see Segail unless he honors my request and leaves. And me, I'll miss the few hours Zayden is here. It will be another week until I can see him. The disappointment hurts more than it should.
Just find the extraction point and secure it? That's our mission? Sawyer asks, eyeing the map like it might bite him. This is not his strongest skill, for certain. No problem, Riddick puffs out his chest.
Oh, right, Professor Grady replies. You see, we have to level the playing field a little bit. Infantry has been doing land nav since their first year, so naturally, they might be a little better at it than you.
Riddick stiffens. The infantry cadets smirk. And you might notice that none of you eight, Professor Grady looks us over, has the ability to fully communicate with your dragons.
Which is bullshit, Riddick says at full volume. A woman on the infantry side gawks.
It is, Professor Grady agrees. It's not something we do lightly either, and your dragons loathe it just as much as you do.
You've all been dosed with a particular mixture of herbs that dulls not only your connections, but your signet as well.
As frustrating as it is, we're actually pretty proud of the concoction, so let us know if you feel any side effects.
Besides you cutting off the most important bond we have, Rhee argues.
Precisely, Professor Grady replies.
I reach for my power, but only a tingle fills my fingers. Gods, I feel vulnerable, and it really fucking sucks.
My mind flies over what the mixture could possibly be as the two professors walk between our groups.
When Grady reaches the end of our section, he turns, moving backward.
Oh, and did I mention that there are two groups of you out here? The other is on the far side of the forest, and while your dragons will be hunting them, their dragons are hunting you. A few unbondeds joined, too.
The fuck? My stomach hollows. Almost every infantry cadet looks faint, and one wobbles where he stands.
Infantry, the riders are going to need to lean on your land nav expertise. But you won't live without them should you encounter a dragon.
Grady looks the eight of us in the eye as he backs away.
Try and see that most of them make it out of here, will you?
He flashes a grin and turns around, walking into the forest with the infantry professor, leaving us in the middle of the fucking woods without supplies or our dragons. We stare at the infantry squad. The infantry squad stares at us. The healers look comically uncomfortable, and the scribe already has a notebook out, pencil at the ready.
Well, this should be a good time had by all, Riddick mutters.
Did he insinuate that we could die?
The smaller of the healers asks, his olive skin paling.
Piss off the dragons and find out, Sawyer replies.
You'll be all right. I look for his name tag. Dyer.
I offer him a smile as I pass on my way to the scribe. Soft red hair frames a creamy white face almost overcome with freckles, as the short woman blinks up at me with even shorter brown lashes.
Effie? They drag scribes into RSC?
Hi, Violet. I'm currently the first in my year training for the field and not to be an adept, she says. You're the most powerful rider in yours. Dyer and Calvin are the best in their years, she shrugs. Naturally, they built the strongest team first.
Riddick grins. So, you're saying we're the team to beat?
Something like that. The scribe fights back a smile.
Then let's make sure we don't get beat, Rhiannon says before turning her attention to the map. Tomas, what do you think?
He hands a map to Brisa and consults on Rhys.
2 hours and several arguments with the infantry later, we're 4 miles from our starting location with another 6 to go.
Rhiannon and Riddick examined our map, which marked where we'd been dropped off on our extraction point, but didn't label our location. Discussed a route with Tomas, made sure we all saw it, and then handed it over to the infantry to agree on a route before we started walking.
I'm telling you, we're in the Parchilli Forest, Cadet Asshole, otherwise known as Calvin, argues with Rhiannon a few steps ahead. He's actually gone about 15 minutes without reminding us he's their ranking officer, so I'm sure we're due any minute now.
That map doesn't resemble any I've ever seen for Shedrick, which means we could be headed the opposite direction we should be. None of these landmarks match.
And I think you're wrong, Rhiannon counters, keeping her tone even.
I think we're in the Haddon Woods, Effie says, holding her journal closely. She already has 3 pages of notes taken. It's the only forest close enough to bring us all by horse, since I doubt your dragons flew us in.
I add, it's also the only forest close enough for Taryn to stay behind and see Sigale without causing either of us pain from the separation.
Their squad leader is the infantry equivalent of Atos, Riddick mutters from my right side.
I nod, but keep from chuckling. Cohen throws his head back on Riddick's right and doesn't bother suppressing his laugh.
Guess Dane's reputation carries across the wings.
Who is Atos? Cadet Quiet asks from Effie's left. It's the first time the curvy brunette has spoken in hours, but her brown eyes are constantly moving, taking in our surroundings. I would bet that she's tied with Brisa, who is covering our flank with Tomas and Sawyer, for most observant in our group.
One of our wing leaders, I answer, kind of like your battalion commander.
Oh, she nods as Rhiannon and Asshole continue arguing ahead of us.
You guys function in sections, right?
Yep.
The landscape hasn't changed. The forest is mostly flat, with a few rolling hills that have been easily scalable.
But the heat? Damn, it's stifling.
I tied my uniform top around my waist about an hour ago, leaving me in my armor. I have no idea how Effie is surviving with her hood up, but she hasn't removed it.
Squad, then section, then wing.
What do we do if we come across a dragon? She asks.
First, we choose a sacrifice, Riddick says, and then we offer it and run.
Her eyes flare wide.
Don't be an asshole, I elbow him in the arm.
Depends on the color, but a good rule of thumb is to lower your eyes and back away, I tell the infantry cadet. But we can usually hear them coming.
Then prepare to be digested, Cohen adds.
Oh, gods, the brunette whispers.
You are now my favorite year mate, Riddick throws an arm over his shoulder.
Can I see your map? Brisa asks from the rear of the formation.
Don't you have your own? Calvin retorts.
Rhys' head whips toward him.
Give it to her, or I'll cut it out of your hands.
He glares at Rhi, but passes it back so we can get it to Brisa.
Gods, this grass is high. It's nearly up to my waist in the places where the trees don't shade the ground.
I step onto an uneven knob and my ankle rolls. Riddick grabs a hold of me before I can fall, then steadies me without a word as we continue the climb.
Thank you, I say softly. Are your knees wrapped?
Riddick asks, concern lining his forehead. I nod.
Yep, didn't do the ankles though, since I wasn't exactly expecting a hike.
I have cloth if you need to wrap something, Dyer calls out from behind us.
I'll keep that in mind, thank you, I answer.
A guy behind me asks, are all scribes this quiet?
It's my job to record, not participate, she answers.
Not participating will still get you eaten by a dragon, he argues.
I assure her my eyes never leave his. I'd never let a scribe get eaten by a dragon.
Rhiannon's voice rises as the argument ahead of us heats.
Because there's no way in hell they hauled us out of our rooms and brought us that far away in 4 hours.
Because your dragons can't fly that quickly? Calvin is about an inch shorter than Rhi and has no problem glaring up at her. Because our dragons wouldn't carry you, dumbass, Riddick responds.
Effie snorts and Mirabelle laughs, flanked by the rest of the infantry squad behind us. Calvin turns and levels a look at Riddick.
Have some respect for the rank.
He taps his shoulder, where there's an open triangle embroidered beneath two oak leaves.
Your rank means exactly jack and shit to me. What, like you're so above us infantry?
Calvin counters.
I mean, technically, when we're flying, we're above everyone, Riddick argues. But if you're asking if I'm better than you, then the answer is obviously yes.
I sigh and watch Calvin's hands just in case he decides to go for the short sword sheathed at his side. It's not a bad weapon, but they all carry them. There's no variation for height or specialization. It's also uniform. Then again, we were pulled straight out of the hallway, so it's not like Riddick is carrying his preferred bow. Sawyer and Rhiannon are missing their favorite swords, too.
Stop pissing him off on purpose, Rhiannon says, glancing back at Riddick as we start trudging up another hill.
Maybe this one will give us a better vantage point than the last.
We're going to need fresh water, or this is going to get ugly fast, Riddick grins. But it's so much fun, she arches a brow.
Fine, he puts his hands up. I'll let him maintain his delusion of grandeur. Ho, 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 so you'll listen to her. She's my squad leader. You're not.
So you only respect rider squad leaders, Calvin prods.
Effie furiously writes in her notebook.
Shut it, Calvin,
a cadet from behind me says with more than a little exasperation.
You want my respect? Earn it, Riddick shrugs. Cross the parapet, climb the gauntlet, survive threshing, and then we'll be on equal footing.
What, like we don't go through some shit in the infantry quadrant?
Someone behind us challenges.
See her? Sawyer says, and I swear I can feel him pointing at me. She bonded not only one of the biggest fucking dragons on the continent, but a second dragon, and then went into combat against the griffins a couple of months ago and came out alive. You go through that kind of shit in your quadrant?
The cadets around us fall silent. Even Effie's pencil remains poised above her notebook as she stares at me. Awkward and wrong. No one in our little group knows what we're really against out there. And my silence? It's starting to feel a lot less like self-preservation and more like I'm complicit.
You're a Sorengale, aren't you? Mirabelle asks. The commanding general's daughter?
She winces.
The hair kind of gives you away.
Yes, there's no use denying it.
Your mother is terrifying, she whispers.
The scribe glances between us before putting pencil to parchment again. I nod.
That's one of her more prominent qualities. Hey, guys, Brisa raises her voice behind us. I think I know why it feels like we're getting nowhere.
Why is that? Rhiannon asks over her shoulder.
Calvin's right, but so are you. They gave us two different maps, she says, as the first of us crest the hill and freeze.
Even my heartbeat comes to a standstill as Rhiannon throws up her hand to stop the rest of the group.
An orange club.
Nope, that's a scorpion tail, growls at us low in her throat from where she's been lying in wait on the other side of the hill. Our heads tilt to follow the movement as she rises to her full height, dominating the skyline, her tail whipping behind her.
Bade, Jack Barlow's dragon. Or at least, she was.
Amari, help us,
Calvin whispers, his panic palpable.
I drop my eyes in deference, just like Kaori taught us, as my pulse leaps and my brain fights the urge to panic.
Oranges are the most unpredictable. Eyes down. Do not run, I whisper. She'll kill you if you run. Try not to show any fear. Shit, this is what we should have been talking about instead of arguing about which quadrant is superior and which forest we're in.
My chest tightens when my immediate instinct to reach for Taryn is denied. With any other dragon, I would bet against risking the anger of our dragons by torching us. But the cadets behind are a whole other story. And since I killed Jack last year, all bets are off. She has nothing to lose. And given the hot blast of steam that levels the grass and makes my face sticky, she remembers exactly who I am.
Riders, Rhiannon calls out, take the front.
She's obviously thinking the same way.
Infantry, guard the healers and scribe.
She glances at me sideways, careful not to raise her eyes.
Violet, maybe you should.
Keeping my head down, I push past Calvin to stand in the front, catching movement in my peripheral vision. I'm not hiding.
What are you doing? It's going to eat you,
one of the cadets behind us hisses. I look over and see a healer, dire, a few feet to my right, staring straight at Bade, his mouth agape. A growl rumbles up the orange's throat, and I lunge, gripping the strap of Dire's medical pack and yanking him behind us, passing him to Riddick, who quickly shoves him to safety and moves to my side.
No, she's not,
Sawyer says, moving forward with Riddick so the infantry is behind us. That's why we're taking the front. Bade swivels her head, then opens her mouth and curls her tongue, and I chance a quick glance, catching her hazy golden eyes narrowing to slits as she arches her neck,
changing her angle instead of lowering her head to strike in the typical.
I inhale sharply.
Rhi, she's going to blast right past us, just like Solas.
Rhi takes less than a second to assess and decide.
Second wing, she calls back. Halt and cover the infantry where you are.
Movement behind us ceases as Bade flexes her claws in the ground and swivels again, choosing a target.
It's, Calvin babbles. Drop your eyes and shut up, reorders. Gods, they all smell scared, Riddick whispers from my right. Exactly how pissed at you do you think she is?
Sawyer asks me from Ree's left.
She dropped a mountain on her rider,
Riddick sighs like we're all fucked, and I couldn't agree more. My heart leaps into my throat as Bade prowls backward, lowering her head to our level. It's the perfect angle to torch us, but I resist the urge to look and keep my eyes trained on the grass in front of me. Hot air gusts in our direction as she scents each of us, starting with Rhiannon and moving to Sawyer. There are a few muffled cries from the infantry cadets as she exhales a dank huff of steam, then breathes in again when directly in front of me. I fight my racing heart. Last year, I might have accepted death, but this year, I'm bonded to one of the deadliest dragons on the continent.
That's right. You might hate me, but I belong to Taryn.
And while there's a good chance Taryn might die if I do, I'm not sure any dragon is willing to risk his wrath if he doesn't. Bade draws back, then darts forward with an open jaw, snapping her teeth shut directly in front of my nose and pelting my face with saliva.
Holy shit. Someone behind us screams, then fucking runs. No, Gwen!
Calvin shouts as Cadet Quiet breaks to the left, sprinting through the grass. Bade's head swings, tracking the movement, and my heart sinks as she drops her jaw, the side of her tongue visible ahead of me as it curls.
Down! Rhi shouts as the other squad leader, Tomas, runs after Gwen, catching her within a few strides and yanking her back by her uniform in the same way I'd snatched Dire from the front, all but throwing her at Calvin as we drop as ordered. She stumbles to the ground at Calvin's feet just as Bade's nostrils flare. Heat consumes the air around us at the same second my chest hits the ground, and I close my eyes like that can block out the sounds of screaming behind us.
The Northern Espens are believed to have been the hatching grounds of the Orange Dragon before unification, though true to their unpredictable nature, they often chose new valleys in the same range, I whisper as fire rages past, fighting to keep my heart from seizing.
I haven't known this type of terror since Taryn began channeling, and definitely not since I manifested my signet. The blast ceases, and Bade snaps her jaws shut, then swings her massive head in front of us one more time before crouching deeply and launching directly over us. I drop my gaze as her poison-barbed tail comes within a foot of me. And then, she's gone. We all scramble to our feet, and riders run toward nothing. Brisa is the first to reach the charred ground where Tomas had stood. Her hand shakes as she reaches toward the still-smoking earth. My mouth waters as nausea rolls through me, but I keep my breakfast down. Mirabelle isn't as lucky, retching in the grass a few feet away. Tomas! Cohen kneels beside Brisa, repivots to face the terrified infantry, her fists clenched at her side.
And that, she shouts, is why you don't fucking run!
An excerpt from page 96, The Book of Brennan. There's a course second year that I can't tell you about, other than to say that it's hell. My advice? Don't piss off anyone else's dragon. Chapter 15. When the sun sets the next day and we have yet to reach an extraction point, it's clear we've failed our land navigation exercise. All because we didn't stop to make sure the two fucking maps matched and now have no clue where we are. Blisters have long since formed and popped on my feet. My bones ache from sleeping on the ground last night, and the idea of spending another night out here just to wander aimlessly again in the morning makes me want to scream in frustration. How could something as simple as land navigation fuck us up this badly? We've backtracked, crossed two creeks that look like they could belong on either of the maps, and narrowly avoided an encounter with an ornery red daggertail who, lucky for us, decided a nearby cow looked tastier than weary, hungry cadets. As I sit against the trunk of a tree down the slight incline from our makeshift camp, relieving Riddick of watch, it hits me that I know a slew of new names. Not that infantry dies at Bezgayeth at the same rate riders do, even though they're the biggest quadrant, with over 1,000 cadets at any given time. But once they get to their units, the upcoming war will devour them at a far faster pace. Did you get dinner? Riddick asks, brushing grass off his pants as he stands. I'll grab some when I'm done. I slip my pack from my shoulders and set it next to me. Not only have I been hiking for 2 days, I've carried textbooks with me. We all have. Infantry caught a good amount of rabbit that should be done cooking any minute.
They're way better at that than we are, he admits begrudgingly, ruffling his hair. You don't think they'll let us meander out here forever, do you?
I think whatever they gave us has to inevitably wear off. I turn my head to see Cadet Dyer walking toward us with Rian and carrying a plate. And our dragons aren't going to let us perish over our inability to work together enough to compare two maps. Then again, maybe they will. We might deserve it, since our stubbornness cost Tomas his life. He sighs, waving to the pair as they reach us.
Hey, Ri. I was just saying that this whole exercise is a little cruel, don't you think? Practicing torture, I get it. Navigating land, I understand. Evading capture, sure. I'll even make an argument for having to learn what bugs are edible. But it's not like other dragons are waiting behind enemy lines to kill us.
You'd be surprised, I mutter, exhaustion getting the better of my tongue.
What? Ri questions.
I mean, we really don't know what's out there, do we?
Hopefully not fire-breathing griffins, Riddick says.
Right. Rhiannon tilts her head, studying my face, and I quickly shrug. Hi, Dyer. I muster a smile.
I brought you dinner.
He looks at me with a reverence I don't deserve.
You didn't have to do that, I reply. I owe you my life, Cadet Sorengale.
He hands me a plate of roasted rabbit.
The least I can do is bring you dinner.
Thank you. I set the plate in my lap. Just do me a favor and keep your head down next time.
Another thing infantry has on us, they carry a rudimentary set of survival gear, including a mess kit in their packs at all times, like they might be deployed at any second. We definitely have a few things to learn from each other.
Anything you need. I'm at your service. I owe you a life debt.
Before I can assure him that he doesn't, Riddick claps him on the back.
I'm going to take life debt back to camp.
I nod in thanks.
And the two walk back up the incline to camp.
Dyer is sweet, but he's been underfoot the entire 2 interminable days we've been lost in these godforsaken woods.
You know what's out there, Rhys says as she sits next to me, pulling her braids over one shoulder.
What? I fumble and nearly drop the plate.
You've been attacked by griffins.
She stretches out her legs and looks at me skeptically.
So you actually do know what's out there, right?
Right. I nod a little too quickly, then cover a jaw-cracking yawn with my hand. My body is at its limit, but I'm sure I can push another couple of hours to make it through watch.
Her frown is fast but unmistakable.
I've got watch. Your body needs the extra sleep. I can do it, I protest.
You can, but it's my job to manage the needs of my squad, and you need sleep. Consider it an order.
There's no room for argument in her tone. This isn't my best friend speaking. It's my squad leader.
Order it is, I stand, brushing the grass off my leathers with one hand and clutching the plate with the other, then giving her a forced, tight-lipped smile before turning toward camp.
Vi? I look back.
Something is going on with you, she says quietly, but there's no mistaking the steel in her tone. I haven't so much as seen Endarna since you returned. You're running with Imogen, of all people. You won't open up about whatever's up with you and Zayden, and you won't talk about war games. You might think that I don't notice that you're pulling away from everyone, but I do. You barely eat with us, and every chance we get to sneak into Shantara, you're holed up in your room reading. She shakes her head, running her hand along the grass. If you're not ready to talk, to tell me what's going on with you, I want you to know that's all right.
My stomach twists as I try to deny it.
Don't, she interrupts softly, her unyielding gaze holding mine. I'll be here when you're ready, because your friendship is precious to me. But please, for the sake of that friendship, don't insult me by lying.
She looks away before I can think of a response.
There's no sleep that night. But at least there aren't any nightmares either.
A convoy of horses and wagons arrives the next morning, as do the professors, who have choice words for our failure.
You were in the Haddon Woods, though none of you could work together long enough to figure it out. It's apparent that we have a lot to learn from each other.
Grady hands each rider a water skin and smiles as the infantry professor does the same for her cadets.
Seeing as you are our top squads, I can't deny that I'm disappointed, but at least most of you survived.
He's disappointed, but Tomas is dead.
I uncork and drink, tasting something sweet and hard to place as I drain it.
Next time, we'll make sure you have supplies, he promises. We wanted to see how you'd make do this first time out.
And now we know. First time out. Great. We get to do this again.
The blanket thrown over my dragon bonds lifts, and power rushes through my veins. I feel like me again.
Tern, behind you. He answers.
Wing beats fill the air and the horses prance nervously as our dragons land at the edges of the trees, the ground vibrating with the force of their landings.
Holy shit, Calvin says softly, backing away with the other cadets.
You're going to have to get used to that,
Riddick pounds the squad leader's shoulder. They'll be at the outposts you're all stationed at once you take your commands after graduation.
Right, but... so close, he whispers.
Probably closer, Riddick whispers back and nods. The seven of us in black say our goodbyes, then head to our dragons.
Does it bother anyone else that they just took away our bonds, our signets, and they handed them back like it wasn't?
Sawyer shakes his head. Even the rhythm of his steps is angry.
Violating, I suggest.
Exactly,
he agrees. If they did it just then, that means they can do it whenever they want.
It's a new development this year,
Tarn says, his eyes narrowing on Professor Grady.
One I do not care for. I could hear you, sense you, but you could not reply.
Tarn isn't a fan either.
Gods, I'm so tired. Why the hell would leadership be developing ways to weaken us?
Because that's what it felt like, being weakened, being cut off not only from my greatest sources of strength and support, Tarn and Andarna, but the very power I've come to depend on.
See, Rhiannon says, I know you don't believe me, but I'm telling you that things are weird this year. Guarded infirmary doors, developing elixirs to muffle our bonds. You were nearly assassinated at assessment.
Pancheck thinks that was someone looking for revenge on my mother. And I didn't say I don't believe you, I counter with selective truths.
You don't say much, period, she shoots a look at me.
Keeping secrets from her is going to shred our friendship. Already, I feel it pulling at the seams. She might be trying to be patient, but it's her nature to solve problems, and I'm a huge one.
Tarn dips his shoulder at my approach.
Please tell me you got to see Sigale, I ask, summoning the energy to mount. Not sure how, but I manage to climb to his back and settle into the saddle.
I did for a couple of hours. That's all the time I was willing to be out of range from you. And only after Bade left.
And they're already gone, right? Why does it feel like my heart is breaking all over again? Missing Zayden is illogical and annoying and kind of pathetic. But I can't make the feeling ebb.
We will see them in a week.
So why does every instinct I have scream we won't?
An excerpt from Recovered Correspondence of Lieutenant Zayden Ryerson to Cadet Violet Sorengale.
My dad hoped I'd go into the infantry like he did. He thought riders were pompous pricks, and in his defense, we really are.
Chapter 16. We're back in enough time for me to visit the archives, so I do just that. If I can't see Zayden, I may as well spend my time researching. It's late afternoon before I can get cleaned up and make my way down there, and it makes me smile to see Jacinia working at one of the tables with Effie. Effie looks up at the sound of my bootsteps, prompting Jacinia to as well. They both wave, and I return the gesture. I pause at the study table, setting down my book to return as the two have a quick discussion before Effie rises and heads to the back of the archives. Then Jacinia walks over, carrying what looks to be the notebook Effie brought along during the land navigation exercise.
What are you doing in here on a Sunday? I sign as she reaches the study table.
She puts the notebook down on the scarred oak surface and lifts her hands to sign.
Helping Effie transcribe her account into the official report to be filed.
She's taking a quick break. Want to see what she chronicled?
She picks up the notebook and offers it to me.
Absolutely, I nod, then take the notebook and skim Effie's neat handwriting.
It's amazingly accurate, with little details I'd missed, like the two infantry cadets who'd offered to be the healer's aides because that's their job for the squad. They have designated roles for each mission. I set it down on top of the book I'm returning to sign.
This is incredible.
Glad to hear it's accurate.
She glances over her shoulder, as if checking to see if we're alone, which we are.
The tricky thing is to capture the truth and not just an interpretation. Stories can change depending on who tells them.
If only she knew.
How does someone like Jacinia graduate to become whatever Markham has evolved into?
Can I ask, what book did Jacek request that got him hauled away and killed? I sign before I think better of it. Her eyes widen. He was killed? I nod. A few days after we saw Markham take him. Her face turns the same shade as her robes. He was looking for an account of a border attack that doesn't exist. I told him there's no such record, but he came back 3 times certain there was, because he'd had family killed in the event. I recorded the request and sent it up my chain of command, thinking it would help him, but... She shakes her head and drops her hands, blinking back tears. It's not your fault, I sign, but she doesn't respond, and it hits me that I could have been hauled away by Markham last year, but I wasn't. And there's only one logical explanation. I glance around us quickly to make sure we're still alone. Last year, you didn't record when I asked for a book that doesn't exist in your records. Her eyes widen. Did you? My hands tremble as I sign. Shit, this is a bad idea. She'll be in danger if I bring her into this. But she's also the best person who can help me find what I'm looking for. And we only have months. No. Why? I have to know. Everything hinges on her answer. At first, because I didn't want to be embarrassed that I couldn't find it. Her nose scrunches. Then because I couldn't find it. She looks over her shoulder at the empty archives. We should have a copy of almost every tome in Navarre here. Yet you told me you'd read one that we don't have. I nod. And then I looked up Wyvern. She spells out the individual letters because there's no sign for the winged creatures. And nothing. We have no recorded folklore like what you read. I know. My heart thrums faster. We're venturing into dangerous territory. Her brow knits under her hood. If you were any other rider, I would have considered that you have a faulty memory and got the title wrong, or even the subject matter. But you're you. I sign slowly so she doesn't miss a word. The title wasn't wrong. I found my copy. She takes a deep breath. Which means our archives are incomplete. There are books in existence we have no record of. Yes. And now we're talking treason. I can't tell her too much, not just for her own safety, but in case I'm wrong about her. I sent requests to other libraries looking for a wider collection of folklore, but the responses made it clear we have the most comprehensive selection. Her forehead wrinkles in concern. Yes. God, she's catching on without me even having to tell her. Does anyone know what you were doing? I implied that it was a personal passion to collect forgotten folklore from the border regions. She winces. And then I implied that I was considering compiling a new tome as my 3rd-year endeavor to graduate. I lied. Her mouth tightens, and she drops her hands. I'm doing a lot of that lately. Once I'm sure we're still alone, I continue. Have you recorded any that I've asked for this year? No. Great Dune. If she's caught breaking regulation, she won't just be denied the adept path. She'll be expelled from the college, or worse. She's already risking so much on my account if she's telling the truth. You're looking for something. I knew it the second you lied about preparing for a debate. She searches my eyes. You're a horrible liar, Violet. I laugh. I'm working on it. Can you tell me what you're looking for? I won't record your requests, not if you're thinking the same thing I am. Which is? That our archives are incomplete, either by ignorance, she breathes deeply, or intention. Helping me could hurt you, my stomach sinks, get you killed. It's not fair to bring you into something dangerous. I can handle myself. She lifts her chin, and her next gestures are sharp. Tell me
what you need.
What can I tell her without endangering her further?
Or risking our exposure? I have no idea if she's capable of shielding Dane or any memory reader from her mind. So clearly nothing about battles or Venon. But that's not what I need anyway.
I need the most comprehensive text you have about how the first six built the wards.
The wards? Her eyes flare.
Yes. It's the simplest request that could be messily explained by wanting to research how to strengthen our defenses. If she tells. But no one can know I'm asking, that I'm researching. More than my life depends on it. The older the text, the better.
She looks away for what feels like the longest minute of my life.
She has every right to pause, to think, to realize just how badly this could go for both of us.
This isn't a slip of memory, simply forgetting to record a request from a friend. This betrays her quadrant, her training. Her eyes meet mine.
I can't risk Effie seeing right now, but I'll find you this week with the first tome I'm thinking of. One is all I can risk going missing. Saturdays are usually the day I work the archives when it's quiet. Bring it back then, and I'll give you another if the first doesn't have what you need. Only Saturdays.
She lifts her brows as she signs those last two words.
When it's quiet, I nod in understanding, my stomach flipping with a mixture of hope and fear that I'm going to get her hurt, or worse.
Glancing over her shoulder, I see Effie walking our way.
Effie is coming, I sign, keeping my hands where the other scribe can't see them. Thank you.
But there's something I want in return. She signs quickly, angling her back so Effie won't see.
Name it.
You think Sloane has a shot? Rhee asks on Monday as we watch the first round of challenges be called out. My stomach churns with nausea like I'm the one who's going to be summoned to the mat.
Fuck.
I'd actually feel better if it was my name I knew they were going to call instead of Sloane's. She'll win, I answer truthfully. I pocket the latest letter Zayden left me on my bed. I've already read it four times, as Arik takes his place on the mat. I glance around and see Aya waiting with first squad and offer a fast smile, which she returns. Ever since she helped me after my near burnout, we've developed a weird sort of relationship. We're friendly, if not friends, at least. Turns out Zayden has known Aya since they were 10, according to the letter. Her mother was active in the government of Tirindor, holding a council seat, even though she was a rider, which is uncommon. In fact, most of the aristocracy chooses to serve in the infantry, just like Zayden's father, because riders are discouraged from holding their family's seats. Not only are our commissions lifelong, instead of the few years an infantry officer can agree to, but too much power in one person terrifies any king.
You forgive him yet for whatever it is he lied to you about?
Rhee darts a meaningful look at my pocket, then folds her arms and glares at a pair of first years shoving each other near the edge of the mat.
Stop fucking around!
They instantly halt. Impressive, I grin, but it falls quickly. And it's hard to talk something out with him when we only see each other once a week. Fucking first years, she mutters, then glances over at me. That's a good point. But you should get some time this weekend. Hey, did Riddick tell you he saw Nolan yesterday? He just said he had to take one of the first years to the infirmary, I say, raising one eyebrow in question. Tristan, she nods.
He's the one with the floppy hair that never quite stays out of his eyes.
Whatever his name is, the guy who shattered his forearm. I don't want to know his name. I already feel responsible for Sloane, who is currently swaying back and forth nervously across the mat. Emotionally attaching to any more first years is just reckless. Riddick said that Nolan couldn't even see them until after dinner, and there were only a handful of other cadets in the infirmary.
And when he walked out of that secretive room he's got with Varish in the back of the infirmary, he was with an air wielder who looked just as haggard,
Riddick chimes in as he sidles up between us. So clearly, Nolan isn't doing his best work. Guy needs a month off.
Arik delivers a punch to his opponent's jaw that makes the guy's head snap back.
I give that a 7,
Riddick heckles from the sidelines.
Out of 10, solid 8,
Sawyer counters from the other side of Rhiannon.
Perfect form.
Then he lowers his voice and adds just for the four of us. And I'm still going with the torture theory. I bet they've got griffin riders in there or something.
You think he's really torturing people back there?
Rhiannon says, lowering her voice even more.
I have no clue,
I blink as Arik elbows his opponent in the throat with a quick jab that even Zayden would respect.
I would think they'd use the main interrogation chambers if they were doing something like that. The ones beneath the school.
That's a fucking 9, Sawyer calls out. 9, Riddick agrees, throwing up his hands with all of his fingers spread out except a thumb.
I laugh, then gasp as Arik breaks his opponent's nose with the heel of his hand, ending the match. Emeterio declares him the winner, and the first year has the decency to make it off the mat before dropping his hand away from his gushing nose.
That's a lot of blood.
Sawyer and Riddick break out in applause, both shouting scores.
Gods, that one can fight,
Ree nods slowly in approval as Arik takes his place in the squad.
Well, when you've had the best tutors, I whisper, grateful he's one secret she knows about. Daddy hasn't come looking for him? She glances my way. Apparently not.
Challenges around us come to an end, and the professors call out the next batch.
Sloane Mari and Dasha Fabrin,
Emeterio calls out.
Hey, Ree, I swallow. Squads shift, but ours keep our mat.
That's the benefit of holding the reigning Iron Squad patch from last year.
Hmm? Remember how I said Sloane was going to win?
Yes, I remember a comment from 10 minutes ago, she teases. A couple of our first years pat Sloane on the back and offer what I hope are words of encouragement as she walks out onto the mat in front of us.
Right. Well, shit, if I tell her, will she feel honor-bound to report me?
She wouldn't, and that's the problem. She'd help me break into the fucking archives if I wanted.
If you can't lie, distance yourself. But this is another thing I don't have to lie to her about.
Dasha joins Sloane on the mat, her shiny black hair braided into a single line from the tip of her forehead to the nape of her neck. She's petite and still has the pallor of a first year who hasn't seen enough sun. But she's nothing close to the shade of green Sloane is turning. There's a slight crimson tint to Dasha's lips that lets me know she had one of the frosted pastries from the tray I'd placed on her squad's breakfast table before they arrived this morning. Now that I'm looking, all of the members of her squad have that same hue to their mouths.
Oh, well, it wasn't like I knew which one Dasha would eat.
If you're going to change your mind and say she's going to lose, then don't tell me. Rhiannon shakes her head. I'm nervous about this one.
Me too, Imogen says, taking the empty spot on my right. That makes 3 of us, Quinn says next to her. She's not just a first year.
No, I agree, noting that even Dane is watching from the next mat over. And to think last year I'd actually hoped I'd be in a relationship with him.
Ree? I lower my voice. She's not going to lose.
Her gaze narrows.
What are you going to do? If you don't know, you don't have to feel guilty about reporting it. Just trust me.
I slide my hand into my pocket as nonchalantly as possible and uncork the small glass vial as the two girls nod, each taking a fighting stance. Ree searches my eyes, then nods as well, turning back to the match.
The first years circle each other on the mat, and I carefully turn the vial in my hand, letting what I know to be a colorless powder fall from the glass into the creases between my palm and fingers.
I withdraw my hand in a fist, keeping it tight at my side as Dasha delivers her first blow, a punch straight to Sloane's cheek. The blonde's skin splits.
Fuck, Imogen mutters.
Come on, Mari, hands up.
Someone screams from the mat behind us, and we all look over our shoulders to see a first year staring lifelessly up at his opponent. Shit. Killing an opponent during a challenge isn't cheered, but it also isn't punishable. More than one grudge has been settled on these mats in the name of strengthening the wings. I suddenly feel a lot less guilty about my plans. The girls circle again, and Dasha kicks high, catching Sloane on the unmarked side of her face so hard that her head snaps sideways. And then her body follows, turning as she falls to the mat, landing on her back.
That was faster than I expected, Ree notes, worry lacing her tone.
Me too. I lift my closed fist to my mouth and shift my weight, making sure that I look as worried as I feel, as Dasha follows Sloane down to the floor. The pair is only a few feet away, so at least I won't have to skirt my way around the mat.
Crouch, I say under my breath to Imogen.
She drops without question.
Come on, Mari!
I lower myself too, panic creeping up my throat at the look on Sloane's dazed face as Dasha lands another punch, then another and another. Blood spatters the mat.
Yeah, that's enough.
I wait for Dasha to exhale, then open my palm slightly and cough hard. She breathes in and gets one more hit. Then she shakes her head and her eyes glaze over.
Get up, Sloane! I yell, looking her dead in the eye.
Dasha falls back on her ass, blinks rapidly, her head wobbling as if she's been at the pub for the evening. Sloane rolls to her side and plants her palms on the mat.
Now, I order her.
Anger fills her eyes and she lunges forward toward Dasha. Dasha's fists curl, but her swing doesn't make contact as Sloane buries her shoulder in Dasha's stomach. At that angle, she'd have to have knocked the breath out of her.
Good. She only has another moment, maybe two.
Sloane scrambles behind Dasha and then yanks her up and into the weakest chokehold I've ever seen.
But hey, if it works.
Yield,
Sloane demands. Dasha bucks upward, her strength and focus returning.
Yield,
Sloane yells this time, and I hold my breath.
Gods, if I judged wrong and Dasha gains the upper hand again.
Dasha finally drops her hand to the mat and taps twice. My shoulders droop in pure relief as Emma Terrio calls the match.
What did you do?
Imogen whispers without looking at me.
What needed to be done.
We both stand as the first years do, but unlike them, we don't stumble as we gain our feet.
You sound like Zayden, Imogen says. My gaze swings toward her.
Relax, it's a compliment, she smiles. Liam is immeasurably grateful right now. I swallow past the lump in my throat.
Not half bad, Rhiannon says, glancing sideways at me before watching Sloane take her place with the rest of the first years in our squad.
Not good either. I'll give the match a 6, Riddick comments. I mean, she didn't lose, so clearly she rates above a 5.
The next pair takes the mat. Once today's challenges are over, I look at Imogen and nod towards Sloane before heading that direction.
Give me a second,
I say over my shoulder to Rhiannon. Imogen jogs to catch up.
Mari,
I say as we round the corner of the mat, crooking my finger at her. Sloane lifts her chin in the air, but at least she comes. This isn't exactly the kind of discussion I want to scream across the gym.
Ouch.
Imogen points to her right eye as she approaches.
That's gonna swell shut.
I won, didn't I? Her voice shakes.
You won because I took Dasha out for you. I keep my voice low and spread my palm wide open, where there's a trace amount of shimmering powder left on my skin.
No, she shakes her head. I won that fair and square.
Gods, do I wish that were true.
I huff out a breath.
Ardis powder,
when combined with an earlier dose of ground lilybell, disorients someone for a minute, maybe two, depending on the dose. Similar to being drunk. Alone, they're mildly upsetting to the stomach. Together, I lift my eyebrows. They kept you alive. Sloane's mouth opens and shuts once, twice.
Damn, Imogen grins, rocking back on her heels as cadets shuffle past, heading for the door.
Is that how you got through those first challenges last year?
Devious, Thorngill. Fucking brilliant, but devious.
I did that for your brother, I tell Sloane, keeping eye contact, even though the hatred shining through hers hurts like hell. He was one of my closest friends, and I promised him while he was fucking dying that I'd look after you. So here I am, looking after you.
I don't need wrong tactic, Imogen lectures. Thank you is appropriate.
I'm not thanking her, she seethes, her eyes narrowing on me. He'd be here if not for you.
That's some bullshit, Imogen snaps. Zayden ordered.
You're right, I interrupted. He would. And I miss him every single day. And because of the love I have for him, it's okay that you hate me. You can think whatever you need to think about me if it gets you through the day, Sloane, but you're going to train. You're going to accept help.
If it's Malik's will that I join my brother, then so be it. Liam didn't need help, she retorts, but there's a touch of fear in her eyes that lets me know most of this is bluster.
He made it on his own.
No, he didn't, Imogen argues. Violet saved his life during war games. He fell off days back, and it was Violet and Taryn who flew after him and caught him.
Sloane's lips part.
Here's the deal. I take a step closer to Sloane. You're going to train so you don't get yourself killed.
Not with me. I don't need to be part of your development era.
But you will meet with Imogen every single day if that's what she wants, because I have something you want.
I highly doubt that. She crosses her arms, but the effect is ruined by the rapid swelling of her eye.
I have 50 of the letters Liam wrote for you.
Her eyes widen.
Oh, shit. Imogen's head jerks toward mine.
Seriously?
Seriously. I don't look away from Sloane. And at the end of every week that you attend and participate in whatever Imogen thinks you need, I'll give one of them to you.
All of his things were burned, Sloane sputters. They were sacrificed to Malik as they should be.
I'll definitely apologize to Malik when we meet, I assure her. If you want his letters, you'll train for them.
Her face turns a mottled shade of red.
You'd keep my brother's letters for me? If they still exist, they're mine. You really are a piece of work.
In this case, I think Liam would more than approve, I shrug. It's up to you, Sloane. Show up, train, live, and get a letter a week. Or don't.
Without waiting for whatever snarky response she can come up with, I turn and leave, walking back toward where Rhiannon is waiting with the upper years of our squad.
You are, Imogen shakes her head as she catches up to me.
I see it now.
What? I ask.
Why Zayden fell for you.
I scoff.
Truthfully, she puts her hands up. You're fucking clever. Way more clever than I gave you credit for. I bet you keep him constantly annoyed.
A smile beams across her face.
How glorious.
I roll my eyes at her.
And you got Sloane to agree to show up tomorrow morning after chores, she tells me. It was a risky move, but it worked.